Mr. Chairman, President Hoover, Governor Dewey, members of the Roosevelt family, and friends and admirers of Theodore Roosevelt. My first act in the tribute that I hope to pay to our ex-president today is an official one. It is a proclamation that I have to sign. And as I sign it, I shall read it to you. It is headed Theodore Roosevelt Week by the President of the United States of America, a proclamation. Whereas Theodore Roosevelt holds an honored place in the annals of our country as a spirited soldier, a far-sighted statesman, an intrepid explorer, and a forceful writer, and whereas the dedication of Theodore Roosevelt's home at Sagamore Hill, Oyster Bay, New York, as a national shrine is to take place during the week of June 14, 1953. And whereas the Congress, by a joint resolution approved on June 13, 1953, has designated the week beginning June 14, 1953 as Theodore Roosevelt Week in honor of our former president, and has requested the president to issue a proclamation calling upon the people of the United States to observe that week by paying tribute to the achievements and memory of Theodore Roosevelt. Now, therefore, I, Dwight D. Eisenhower, President of the United States of America, do hereby call upon the people of the United States to observe the week beginning June 14, 1953 as Theodore Roosevelt Week by paying tribute to the achievements and memory of that great American. And I urge interested individuals and organizations to take part in appropriate ceremonies commemorative of the inspiring role of Theodore Roosevelt in our national heritage. In witness whereof, I have hereunto set my hand and seal. Which I trust makes this ceremony the beginning of a week of spontaneous tribute to one of the greatest Americans that we have produced. I want to refer for a second to the Army and some of its practices. In its schools and in its educational systems, we are required to study the processes, the acts, the decisions of leaders of the past. Now, contrary to popular notion, these studies are not confined to the decisions of military commanders. We look up and study the actions of leaders to see what were the problems facing them, how did they analyze them, how did they reach their decisions, what did they do. One of the men who was a favorite for study in my generation was Theodore Roosevelt. Now, there is one thing I should like to say that I learned during that study. We are apt, I think, when we cast our minds back to dramatic figures of the past, to over-dramatize them. For example, of Teddy Roosevelt, the Rough Rider, we like to think in his relationships with the Congress, he galloped down Pennsylvania on a spirited charger with his saber drawn, rushed into the Senate, to the House, demanded what he wanted, and rode out with everybody cowed. And that, in more or less a rough similarity, is paralleled in every picture we have in our minds of what he did. But the fact is, he was a wise leader. He wasn't a swashbuckler, and he was not a bull in a china shop. Governor Dewey has spoken about the illustrious predecessor he had up at Albany. And when he went there, he found that a great branch of his party, headed by Mr. Platt, was horrified at some of the programs for which Teddy Roosevelt stood. And did he get a ball bat and to pound him over the head? Did he take the stump and curse this man? He did not. His biographers say that he set out to win this man. And they said he resorted to cajolery. He used every form of polite advance that there was open to him, including, the biographer says, many breakfasts. I want to point out that leaders do become different things in our minds often when they have been possessed of certain dramatic mannerisms. They are quite apt to get lopsided in our minds. Here was a man who was rounded. He not only was the great moral leader that Governor Dewey spoke about, possessor of great moral courage, a great soldier in his regiment. He was a great reader and a great student and a great writer. His Winning of the West is today a classic. He was a man who understood his fellow human beings. He understood those things for which they yearned and which they deserved under the principles in which he believed. And he set out by patient work. Nothing was too mean for him to do. Nothing was too difficult for him to tackle. And there was no one of whom he was frightened as he started to do it. And he had the stamina, the courage, the persistence to carry through. Even, and I remember as a young officer in World War I, I saw in the paper that he had volunteered his services to command a division if his government wanted it. And I remember so well in the regiment in which I was then serving in Texas, at least a half a dozen young officers went up to the adjutant to put down our names to say, could we go to the division commanded by Theodore Roosevelt? That, I think, explains what he meant to us as a young man. In these later years, as we look back and study his career and get it in perspective, it grows only more brilliant with time. I believe it will continue to do so. I think that along with the dedication of this house today, if each of us could dedicate himself to attempt to emulate Theodore Roosevelt in his consideration for what we so futilely call the common man, for want of a better word, but if we could emulate his devotion to that American citizen, to all citizens, if we could have his courage in carrying through, his wisdom in seeing what was right and adhering to the right, then I'm quite certain that not only will Sagamore Hill and this house stand as a great monument, but each of us in his own way will build a little monument to America. And that is what, after all, he did. He built a monument to America. My friends, thank you very much.